Accession number 4600, reel 5.
Flight Lieutenant Townsend, reel 5.
We were all very saddened at the manner of Air Chief Marshal Hart's passing, because he became the first Director of Engineering and Equipment in the Air Ministry, and did an outstanding job of work there, and then came off active service. And as it was told to me, he was mowing his lawn one day at his house in with bare feet in the summer, using an electric mower, and the extension lead was hooked up the wrong way round, and either he thought it was switched off or something odd like that, but anyway, he picked up a hot plug, and of course, being in bare feet on wet grass, he was electrocuted, and that was it. Terrible tragedy. Where were we? About security.
Let's go on after you left Canewdon next to your final posting before the outbreak of war, to Malta.
Yes, that was a bit of a giggle in a way, because having been based in Malta when I was in Fleet Air Arm, they called for volunteers to take a radar station out to Malta. This was to be the first transporter war radar that ever went away, and they wanted a small crew to take it out to Malta in January 39 and erect it and come home again. And as I knew Malta and quite liked the place, I thought it'd be quite fun to go back. So I put my name down, and we duly left Canewdon and went up to Bawdsey Manor to see the equipment we were to take. And it was connected up to the mains and working after a fashion, but frankly I wasn't terribly happy with the way it did work. But still, it worked after a fashion, and it was all shipped up and put in the ship, and off we went. And we went out by a P&O boat. Sorry, a British India boat, not P&O, a British India boat, and which was a bit of a contrast from HMS Shropshire, but anyway, we duly arrived in Malta and got this stuff out onto the site. And our transmitter and Meadows petrol generating set were in one lorry, our receiver was in another lorry, and we had two trailers with Merriweather 70-foot telescopic wooden masts on them to carry the two aerials. The site was already selected for us, and we were put out at Dingley, which is which has a site height according to the Ordnance Survey map of 817 feet, the highest point of the island. As luck would have it, it turned out to be a very good site, particularly from the point of view of detecting the Italians, but I'm afraid the equipment was rather, it was well put together, all right. Metvic never put anything together unless it's like a battleship, but as far as the radio frequency side was concerned, it wasn't very brilliant. And we found that the transmitter, in fact, we used to wind it up to put 25,000 volts on the final anodes, but the when we got up to 5,000 volts, instead of the transmitter pushing out pulses, it went into continuous wave, which would trip out all the breakers and you'd have to start all over again. Well, very fortunately, we took out with us a civilian scientific officer, H.T. Roberts, and who was a BBC man, but anyway, he was extremely good on transmitters, and we more or less gutted the RF side of the transmitter and rebuilt it and eventually got it to work. But all this took quite a long time, And we had trouble with other components, such as the relays on the aerial, for example. The relays on the transmitter aerial were never made to stand the sort of doubtful 40 kilowatts that we could push out. And so, that, you know, we had to change those, and goodness knows what. But one way and another, we were still struggling with it, and we had heating problems. The transmitter invariably overheated simply because the Meadows was in the same van, and the only way to operate it was with the doors wide open and a fan stuck in the roof blowing hot air upwards and that sort of thing. But by the time September 39 came along, we'd got it working reasonably well, and we were in fact achieving one or two operational successes with the set, but by no means could you say it was in a state to hand over. And then, of course, events in August caught up with us, and when September the 3rd came along, the war was declared, and there we were, stuck with it, and so there we had to stay. But it was very, very interesting indeed, and I wouldn't have missed it for anything. The operational side particularly was completely strange to the people that we had in the headquarters Mediterranean. When I put it that way, I think I'm putting it fairly kindly, because the we were something of a novelty, and people would come up to have a gawk at the at us and try and get in and see the equipment. They'd heard rumours about what it would do. I'm not suggesting for one minute that they would breach security or anything like that. They wouldn't. But at the same time, they'd have a giggle among themselves about these funny people out at Dingley, you know, and telling us that they can see aeroplanes some 70 miles away. Well, we fetched in three Blenheims for ferrying aircraft to the Middle East had started using Malta as a staging post. And we fetched in three Blenheims for them one night that got themselves lost and were wandering around the Med. And fortunately, we picked them up on the radar. And we had no WT to communicate with them. And anyway, it would have breached security if we'd gone on the air and told them which way to steer. But by hooking us up by landline with an ordinary DF Air Force DF station at Halfar, we passed the information, the position information, to Halfar. They would pass it up as a bearing, which of course is a perfectly normal thing for a DF station to do. And this way, the Blenheims were brought in, and that did produce a signal of congratulations from the AOC the next morning. And there were several more like that. You know, that sort of thing was going on. But by and large, really, HQ Med just did not believe what we could do. They just didn't believe it. And it wasn't until the first hostiles actually appeared on the screen. We passed down the information that there they were and what range they were, and then gave the decreasing ranges as they came in, and lo and behold, when we said they were nearly overhead, there some Italians were dropping bombs on us.
When was that?
That was quite early on. I'm not sure the exact date, but it was quite early on in September. But Italian high-level bombing from about 18,000 feet was very good, too. Very good indeed. Our barrage was also quite near the target, but at the same time, not really near enough. But, of course, what made the day was the fact that we had some radar that worked anyway. And they scratched around and found three naval gladiators, biplane fighters, in packing cases at Califrana. And the AOC stuck his neck out and ordered them to be assembled and bashed up to Halfar, the aerodrome at Halfar. found some volunteer fighter pilots, and we got fighters airborne. But of course, three gladiators, you know, I mean, everybody knows now they were Crescent, Faith, Hope and Charity, but three gladiators on their own, unless they know when the enemy is coming in, are completely and utterly useless. You can't possibly carry out standing patrols with three aircraft. And the fact that we were able to give them ample warning of when to scramble and where to go, roughly where to go, with a rough indication of height, which was frankly was all we could give at the time. Okay, they get above, they go way up, probably climb up to about 25,000 feet, and we'd be able to give them. Well, then from the ground control, they would give them a sighting signal, and off they go with a tally-ho. And they shot down 25, I think it was, between them before we lost one. Shot down 25 Italians. And, well, as I'm sure it changed the whole air defence situation in Malta. Obviously it did. And we carried on our own single-handed with just myself and the eight crew that I had until June 1940. Now, I went out as a corporal. I'd been promoted corporal in March 38, soon after I got to Canewdon. I went out to Malta as a corporal with a flight sergeant in charge, Flight Sergeant James. And Jimmy, unfortunately, got invalided home. And, must have been late in 1939. Because I got made up to sergeant and then to flight sergeant. And left me holding the baby with the chaps. And I say there were nine of us altogether, which we split up into three crews of three to operate over as much of the 24 hours as we could. The big snag was the Meadows generating set, which was far from stable. But then, you know, it had never been designed to do that sort of job. We had to have a stable main supply, but it was never designed for it. We took it out of its van and stuck it into a little stone building that Works and Bricks put up for us in a hurry, which made it a lot better, but it still wasn't very good. And we just felt that we just could not run that or the transmitter, come to that, for 24 hours a day. And so we used to shut down at night for a few hours, let it all cool off, and start up again the next morning before dawn. And say three watches of three to do that lot. We used to have one chap in the receiver, one chap in the transmitter, and one chap looking after the Meadows. Simple as that. And then swap them around. Hour on the tube and then change round and off we go. Sorry. The operational side at HQ Med was a bit odd because they were still very rank conscious. You see, the Air Force pre-war was terribly rank conscious. The controller had to be of the rank of wing commander or above. No one below wing commander was possibly sensible enough to control aircraft. They had the signals officer had to come out of his office and operate the RT. Again, it was very infradig for a wing commander to talk into a microphone and speak to an aeroplane. So you get the waste of time with the controller telling the signals officer what to say and the signals officer passing it up to the aircraft. And their table, the ops table, was simply marked off with a map of the island and range rings and bearing lines every 10 degrees, I think. Obviously, we passed up range and bearing. We had no grid references or anything like that to work on, and we passed up range and bearing, and that was it. So they had their table marked in range and bearing, and so on. And then when we got a few more stations, three more low-looking stations, that's 200 megacycle stations, came out in with the other transportable, like ourselves, in June 1940. And when they all got set up, they didn't want to change their table, their ops table, and put one with the grid grid on it. So they wanted all the other stations to pass their plots to us. We would convert them to our range and bearing and then pass them down to the ops room, which, of course, would have been another sheer, utter waste of time. You know, it would have taken minutes to do the operation for every plot. But this is how they wanted it. It took us a long time to persuade them to have a grid. However, that's coming into wartime itself, isn't it? Going back to, I think, 1934, and almost certainly it was after I'd come out of Halton Hospital, they thought they'd better find something a little bit lighter for me to do, so I was put in charge of an RT tender. This was old Morris Commercial 1500 weight chassis with a box body on it, and the same receiver and transmitter on board as we had we were using in the aircraft, and an aerial which one could wind up and down on a framework. This also was sent out with different army formations during exercises on Salisbury Plain, and the job there was to speak to the spotting aircraft and give them instructions from the army formation, and direct them which battery to look after and that sort of thing. That was quite good fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that time, although again the equipment wasn't very good, and 20-25 miles was about the most we could ever achieve working with an aircraft, but still it was quite good, quite interesting and quite good. We had several amusing things, like we were always sent out with a map reference, except once. And then I was just told to go to Wilsford Church.
To which church?
Wilsford. I think it was Wilsford. A small village, anyway. That, in fact, I knew quite well. This was not all that far from Old Sarum, but on the other side of a river. And as I say, I knew it quite well from walks around the countryside and that sort of thing. So to this church I headed, and we bedded down there and waited for an aircraft to come up and talk to us. Or waited for an army formation to appear. But there wasn't a soldier in sight for miles, and so we eventually bedded down for the night. After I'd phoned Old Sarum and spoken to the station duty officer and said, please, here we are where we're supposed to be, I think, and we can't find any soldiers. And he said, well, where were you told to go? And I told him. He said, well, are you there? I said, yeah. He said, right, well, all you can do is stay there. So the next morning, an aircraft took off from Old Sarum very early in the morning and called us up. And to our surprise, we heard him straight away. And to his surprise, we replied straight away. And he said, right, where are you? We said, so-and-so church. He said, well, I don't see you. I'm over there now, and I don't see you. What's your map reference? Are you at map reference so-and-so? And he gave us a map reference, which was quite different from the one we were at. And there were, in fact, two places of the same name. So we spent a very comfortable night bedded down. This RT tender was quite well equipped, by the way. We had a couple of primer stoves and frying pan and saucepans and that sort of thing. And it's a reflection, actually, on prices and inflation and so on. If I tell you that three of us forming the crew of this tender, we would put in 2 shillings each about a 3-day exercise, and we'd buy bacon and eggs and sausages and goodness knows what, simply because we much preferred eating that away than eating off the army who were in fact supposed to feed us. We'd just take their bread and tea and sugar and milk and so on, but otherwise tell them what to do with their rations. And another time we had an exercise which wound up at Farnborough, and there were a lot of squadrons in on this, and my tender was detailed to go to East Hampstead Park and pick up the rations for 29 people. And when we got back to Farnborough with them all, we took them along to the cookhouse, and they didn't really want them because the people had already been fed. And there we were with eggs and bacon for 29 people, and large chunks of meat and so on, and we were very busy frying eggs and so on the parade ground at Farnborough the next morning when the four troops were going off on colour hoisting parade. A lot of fun. But I had an obliging driver. The whole point about the RT tender is I had an obliging driver. It had a crash gearbox, you know, no synchro mesh. But I had an obliging driver, and he used to let me drive. He used to let me take over. And this is really where I learned to drive four wheels. I think, gentleman, the name of Paget. He used to let me drive away, and I had great fun. And I recommend that everybody learns to drive on a non-synchro mesh gearbox. If you can drive that, you can drive anything. It's very good.